Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the 14th day of March, 2024. It's a Thursday. This is the Derek Hunter Podcast. I appreciate you listening, downloading, sharing, telling a friend, all that good stuff. This is the one I think going into it, you're going to probably want to share. So share it and will. Please do. Don't keep it a secret. Spread the word. You're the best and only advertising that we have on the program. So thank you for that. And don't forget about the Week in Heaven review and the contest and all that good stuff, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Love each and every one of you supporting there. And you can win an assigned Donald Trump Jr. book. Huh? Who else is giving you that? Nobody, I tell you. Nobody. All right, let us get started. We have a lot of things going on. There's a bunch of stuff to talk about. We've got an abject lesson in the difference between the United States and Europe. And, it's one of those things you just think, well, we share a similar culture. This is UK. No, it's totally different. It's totally different. And we've got an up. Let's do the hearing yesterday with Special Counsel Robert Hur first, because it was what I thought it would be. It really is what I thought it would be. And it's sad, because it could have been more. But Republicans always do this. And Robert Hur, you're a Republican. You're a Republican. Democrats have absolutely no interest in what the witness has to say. It was all about Donald Trump. No, Robert Hur didn't investigate Donald Trump at all. He's not that special counsel. That special counsel indicts people on flimsy evidence and goes after them politically, regardless of what their conscience may not. They don't have a conscience, but regardless of what the evidence might suggest, they don't care. Democrats are Democrats. Robert Hur is a registered Republican. And when you see a registered Republican, when somebody makes a point of registered Republican, that doesn't necessarily mean conservative. It just means not necessarily a Democrat. And a lot of times, and you'd be surprised, because you'd like to think that people are principled, but you'd be surprised how people will register certain ways because it's politically expedient for them. I don't know that that's the case with Robert Hur, but I do know that some people, a lot of people who lived in Washington, D.C., I can't say that for sure. I know that Tucker, when he lived in Washington, was a registered Democrat, because in the primary, in the Democratic primary, that's where the real election happens. The Democrats going to win. So the only way you can have a chance at having your voice heard or having some sort of impact on where the government's going to go in that district is to vote in the Democratic primary. So they make you register as a Democrat. It's pretty simple, pretty basic stuff. I've known a lot of people that way. And then there are some people who are like, I'm more nominal this way or that way. And you got to register as something, because if you want to work in politics, you're going to have to do this, that, or the other thing. So you go with your 51% ally and run with it. Like I say, pretty simple. Robert Hur is hardly a stalwart of conservatism. Not to say that he's a left-wing wacko, but I just want to give it some perspective. So he goes to this job, and he was picked by the Attorney General, but make no mistake, he would not have been picked by the Attorney General if he were some sort of conservative stalwart. They don't put somebody like that into a position like this. Democrats don't. Hell, Republicans don't. So he's up there, and he gives the typical Washington lawyer answer to everything. Well, I didn't say that. I can't say this. I can't say that. It's like boxing Jell-O. Like, what are you fighting Jell-O? You hit Jell-O and it's just bloop, bloop, bloop. And nothing came of it. Nothing came of it. Republicans got him to admit that Joe Biden broke the law, but didn't get him to really admit why, aside from his stated claim that Joe Biden wouldn't be convicted by a jury in Washington, D.C. because he'd come across as old and forgetful, and it's a Democrat in Washington, D.C. And Democrats kept on saying, you exonerated Joe Biden. You exonerated Joe Biden. And he kept saying, no, I didn't exonerate him. That's not what the report said. And they go, I'm reclaiming my time, reclaiming my time. Exonerated, exonerated, exonerated. And MSNBC ran a montage of, oh, they exonerated, exonerated, exonerated. And they all said, oh, it's wonderful. Joe Biden did nothing wrong. Joe Biden did do something wrong. But Joe Biden did something right in order to be able to do something wrong. Joe Biden is a Democrat, and Joe Biden has been a Democrat his whole life. And so, as a Democrat, you don't have to worry about being held to account. There are five different locations, at least, where Joe Biden kept classified documents. And it's not that he kept classified documents in unsecure places, like three different locations in his mansion in Rehoboth, or at the Penn Biden Center, or in offices in Chinatown in Washington, D.C., right next to agents of the Chinese government. I'm sure there's no way they decided one night to just go and check out what was in the former vice president's office. There's no way they would ever do that. China is a friend. They didn't care. Democrats didn't care. The special counsel found evidence that the President of the United States, current President of the United States, disseminated red classified documents to his ghostwriter. Big shock there. There's a, you know, shocking development. People, powerful people, rich people. Biden got $8 million. Can you imagine $8 million? There's no way that book earned back. But he got $8 million for his memoir. He probably paid $100,000 to $150,000 to somebody to ghostwrite it. And he read classified material to his ghostwriter. His ghostwriter recorded these things. And then when Robert Hur was appointed special counsel, knowing full well that this would be evidence, the ghostwriter destroyed the evidence, deleted the recordings. Deleted the realization he kept the transcripts. There's a huge difference between a transcript and a recording. Transcript, you can refute a transcript. Well, you misunderstood. That's not what I said. I don't know where this came from. You got the audio recording. That's a little bit harder to refute. So the ghostwriter deleted it. Now, I can tell you, as somebody who has ghostwritten, not for somebody who's gotten an $8 million advance, I'll tell you that much. But as somebody who has ghostwritten and had an opportunity to ghostwrite another book that's actually coming out next Tuesday, which is just, I don't know, the concept seems terrible to me. And so that didn't work out. You take copious notes and you record things. It doesn't occur to you to delete things, even after. And by the way, if those recordings have value, they have historical value, and they have archival value, and you can donate them for a pretty hefty tax deduction if you're writing for somebody like a vice president. I never did that. But if you're writing for somebody like a politician, a famous politician, president, vice president, senator, prominent member of Congress, you can say, I'm going to donate. They always donate their papers. Joe Biden donated his papers to the University of Delaware. And then promptly made sure that they were sealed until like 10 years after he was dead, so we can't find out whether or not Tara Reid told people in the office and filed a complaint against Joe for raping her in the halls of the Capitol, because he doesn't want that information out there. Again, people with nothing to hide don't hide stuff. Just saying. But you can donate them. You can sell them. You can do all sorts of things with these recordings. I know one guy wrote a book about Dick Cheney, who was able to, I can't remember if he got a huge tax deduction or a lot of money. I think it was a lot of money to sell the hours and hours of interviews he had with Dick Cheney to whatever college it was. He was archiving them. So you don't delete them. And a normal human being recognizes, hey, there's an investigation going on here, not a congressional investigation, but one from the Department of Justice. The concept of obstruction of justice and destruction of evidence is not foreign to these people. They understand that it is a crime. But is it really? It's not really if you're a Democrat. I want to play you a clip of Congressman Matt Gaetz basically laying this out. I give Matt Gaetz a lot of grief a lot of times because he deserves a lot of grief a lot of times. Sometimes he gets something right. And in this case, he gets something right because not only did Robert Hur decline to charge Joe Biden because he's senile and has a failing memory and wouldn't get a conviction in Washington, D.C., he decided not to charge the ghostwriter. Now, when charging as a prosecutor, you're not supposed to charge on whether or not you can get a conviction. In the political sense, in the whims and wills of the moment, in the, well, would a jury in this jurisdiction convict? It's whether or not you can prove that the person did it. Whether or not a jury convicts is entirely up to the jury. The prosecution is supposed to proceed if you have the evidence to justify an indictment. In the case of Joe Biden and in the case of the ghostwriter, they have what would seem to be, to a layman, enough evidence. More than enough evidence, in fact. But he declined to charge, which Matt Gaetz then asks, what does somebody have to do to get charged? This exchange, I thought, was one of the few that was worthy of note, and very few that was worthy of note yesterday.
The ghostwriter, he did tell us, and I'm trying to get the exact language, that one of the things on his mind, one of the things he was aware of, was that I had been appointed special counsel and was conducting an investigation.
Right, so he didn't, just so everybody knows, the ghostwriter didn't delete the recordings just as a matter of happenstance. Ghostwriter has recordings of Biden making admissions of crimes. He then learns that you've been appointed. He then deletes the information that is the evidence, and you don't charge him.
That is reflected in the report, and one of the reasons...
Like, what does somebody have to do to get charged with obstruction of justice by you? If deleting the evidence of crimes doesn't count, what would meet the standard?
So, Congressman, as we state in the relevant chapter of the report, one of the things that Mr. Zwanitzer did not delete was transcripts of the recordings that he had created that included inculpatory evidence relating to Mr. Biden.
Oh, so if you destroy some evidence but not other evidence, that somehow absolves you?
It's insane. It's an insane argument to make. There's a huge difference between reading a transcript and saying, yes, here's classified material, and the actual voice of the person reading the classified material. A huge difference. Everybody knows that. There would be no other... Why would you delete what you could sell? Why would you delete which has historical interest, not as well as monetary interest? You wouldn't. Unless you're trying to hide something. And the prosecutor says, no, we're not going to charge. You're not going to charge anybody. It reminded me of James Comey and Hillary Clinton. Back in 2016, when he came out and he did that press conference and he laid out a damn convincing case against Hillary Clinton for mishandling, again, classified material, for lying about it, for setting up her own secret server and having classified material on an unsecure server that there's no way in God's green earth wasn't hacked. And at the end, he says, yeah, but no reasonable prosecutor would bring, you just laid out a hell of a case. You laid out a great opening and closing argument, and you're telling me that no reasonable prosecutor, that's where the judgment comes in. See, there's the facts, and then there's the judgment. Now, I understand that prosecutors have to exercise discretion, but the standards by which these people, in the cases of Democrats, that is, have exercised said judgment is, shall we say, suspect. Let's just call it suspect. Because you have what? In Hillary's case, you have somebody, there's no doubt she violated the law. But somehow this no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges. What does that mean? There are plenty of people, many, many, many members of the military. In fact, I don't know that I've ever heard of a single instance of somebody in the military mishandling classified material anywhere near the extent that Hillary Clinton did. And not being charged because, well, you know, it was just an oopsie. They accidentally put it into their briefcase. You know how these things happen. I've never heard that. And with Joe Biden, it's not a matter, because with Hillary Clinton, it wasn't a matter of whether she did it or not. James Comey laid out a convincing case and argued semi-passionately for a robot that Hillary did it. And that he had the evidence of Hillary doing it and knowingly doing it. But no reasonable prosecutor would bring charges. Now, in the case of Joe Biden, he did it. The special counsel laid out the case. He did it. And he lied to me about it. He lied in the investigation about it. And then he did a whole bunch of I can't remembers and I don't knows. And I can't remember how those classified documents got into my boxes is not a defense. That's not how it works. You don't go, well, they don't remember committing treason. Well, because you can't prove that they don't remember. They can't prove that they don't remember. You can prove that they did it. And that's all you have to prove to get a conviction. You don't have to prove that they remember doing it. They can try and make the case that they don't remember doing it, and that's somehow exculpatory, but you just have to prove that you did it. And Robert Hur says he can prove that he did it. The ghostwriter right there who had information not allowed to have given to him, read to him by the President of the United States from the classified... You can't claim that Joe Biden didn't know he had classified documents when he's reading classified documents and telling the ghostwriter that he's reading classified documents to him at a time when he is neither senator with access to classified documents or vice president with access to classified documents. He was a private citizen, as they say. Well, he should have never had these documents because he never in his life to that point had the ability to declassify anything. They had him dead to right. But because Robert Hur said, well, no jury is going to convict him. That's not the standard for prosecution. At least it's not supposed to be the standard of prosecution. Otherwise, let's face it, in cities like in Baltimore, where jury nullification is common, in Philadelphia, where jury nullification is common, where jury nullification is the jury looks at the, that's like the OJ jury. They hear all the evidence, like, he's dripping with blood. He said, I'm going to kill you. Here's video of him killing her. He's eating her heart while it's still beating, blah, blah, blah. And they go, yeah, but we want to stick it to the man, so we're going to vote not to convict. That kind of thing is jury nullification. You're not supposed to take that into account. You can't go, well, we're never going to convict a Democrat in this district. Sure, you're probably never going to convict a Democrat in this district. But does that mean that Democrats can get away with literally murder? Anything? Anything in that jurisdiction? Because there's no way the Democrat's going to be convicted. By the way, a big part of a trial, a jury trial, is the jury selection. And the prosecutors have a big hand in jury selection. And so they can influence, you know, it's a bunch of partisan Democrats with donkey tattoos on their necks. You probably don't want them on your jury, and you can make a pretty good case to get them tossed off your jury. Try and get somebody who would be fair. You can figure that out if you're smart, but it doesn't matter. You're never going to get ahead in the political world if you go around treating people in politics the way you treat people in the military, the way you treat anybody else. That's not the way, Democratic politics, I should say. Because, of course, Donald Trump did, or exactly what these two did, what Hillary Clinton did, and what Joe Biden did. With a very important difference. I can't say he did exactly what they did. Well, there's more to what Donald Trump did. Because, you see, unlike Hillary Clinton, and unlike Joe Biden, Donald Trump actually held a job where he could declassify information. right? He had the authority to take information with him anywhere and retain it, really. He could declassify it. He didn't have, there's no paperwork. If you're going to declassify this, you've got to fill out this piece of paperwork. The left likes to pretend that there is, but there is no form 1217B where you're like, if you're going to declassify this, you've got to fill out this one. That's not how it works. The president can just say it and it's declassified. Members of Congress can just say it. On the floor of the House or the Senate, they have absolute immunity. They can declassify things, but only there. They don't get to take documents home. Joe Biden had no job in his life where he had the right to retain documents that are classified or just government property. But he's not charged because they'll never get a conviction. Of course, you'll never get a conviction if you never try. It's weird how that works, isn't it? So I want to switch gears now because, like, honestly, I got one more clip from the hearing. It's not actually from the hearing. It's Joe Biden saying he never did nothing, never told anybody, never spread any information, denies spreading classified information, and then Robert Hur saying that he did. And I'll tell you, one of the things about the way politics is today and the way that the Democrats simply do not, they are pot committed. They are the suicide bombers of politics. They are willing to die for their cause, and they don't care how stupid they look doing it. Is Democrats didn't bother trying to refute this. Democrats didn't bother. They weren't upset by this. That Joe Biden read classified material unambiguously to his ghostwriter. Yeah, they deleted the audio, but even the transcripts say he did it. Joe Biden denies that he did it, which is, even by the Democratic standards, is a lie. They just don't care. It's perfectly fine to admit you don't care, but to pretend it didn't happen is where you lose me. And the Democrats spent all of yesterday's hearing pretending that it didn't happen, and instead insisting there's no evidence. You exonerate him. And Hur's like, I didn't exonerate him. I had a really crappy standard that I said I wouldn't get a prosecution. No, you exonerated him. And every time Hur responded, I'm reclaiming my time. There were very few questions. They talked more about Donald Trump, which Hur had nothing to do with. So there's no way for him to answer a question about Donald Trump. But that's how they are. That's how it is. Like, if they were the OJ jury, they would spend their time talking about his rushing yards with the Bills rather than, you know, the day that he cut off his wife and friend's head. Okay. Yeah, maybe he committed murder. I don't know. I'm not an expert. I wasn't there. But let me tell you what. Nobody could run through an airport and jump over luggage in a television commercial for a rental car company quite like OJ. So I don't see how you could think a man like that with those kind of skills could slice somebody's head off slowly, let alone two people. But here is the president of the United States denying reading classified information just with a cut of Robert Hur saying he found irrefutable evidence, including a confession by the ghostwriter, of just that.
Thank you, everyone. I did not share classified information. I did not share it.
With your ghostwriter.
With my ghostwriter. I did not. Guarantee you did not.
We also identified other recorded conversations during which Mr. Biden read classified information aloud to his ghostwriter.
Yeah, I did not. I guarantee you I did not. We found evidence that he did. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's like jury saying, yeah, okay, sure, there's video footage of OJ slicing those people's heads off, but what we don't see is what leads up to that moment where they were probably asking for it. Some people you just can't reach. Some people it just doesn't matter. But what's amazing to me is you can have a committee of like 40 people, half of which, so say for maybe one, so it's like 21 to 19, are Democrats. And there isn't a single Democrat among them who gives a damn. Not a single Democrat. There isn't one. Not just by accident. There's one who's like, you know what? This is pretty egregious. I'm glad you didn't charge him. I'm going to vote for him. I hope he gets reelected, blah, blah, blah. But this is pretty damn egregious. and we need to make some changes to the law to make sure this doesn't happen again. It would be garbage. It would be a ridiculous argument. You can't say, well, I don't want to convict this person of murder, but we need to make sure that there's like super anti-murder laws in place in the future. But at least you'd sit there and you go, okay, it's acknowledging reality. He killed him. I don't care that he killed him, but he shouldn't have killed him. He's my team, so I'm going to let the murder slide, but we should probably in the future set the bar a little bit higher so that nobody is murdering anybody. That's what should happen. It didn't happen. Not one single Democrat asked a serious question about what Joe Biden did. Not one. They didn't care. It wasn't an issue. It's just bizarre. You look at how the left handles anything like this. It is different. And I understand it. I get it. They're a hive mind. They are about the over... Like, in a way, it would be better if the conservative movement were like the progressive movement and that, you know, would stick together, no more criticizing anybody on our own team, no firing down our own trench and all of those things. And I'm not a big fan of willy-nilly firing down our own trench. It occasionally is necessary. It occasionally is necessary because sometimes some things are just so damn stupid that to acknowledge them is important. And to not acknowledge them is damaging, something your own side does, or what is perceived to be your own side. Now, I don't listen to any of these people. I don't listen to podcasts, ironically enough. I just don't. But I am aware of them. I am aware of the people who make a bunch of money off of them. I am aware of all this stuff. And you look at them, and say, a Candace Owens is very popular. But Candace Owens, quite frankly, says some really stupid things that you just sit there and you go, why? What is the point of this? And they make everybody on the right look bad because you have to answer for it, because the left has to answer for nothing and the right has to answer for everything. And it's just so, the latest thing, the Daily Mail, the UK Daily Mail, Candace Owens, headline, Candace Owens says she'll stake her entire reputation on debunked theory that French First Lady Brigitte Macron is a man. Why? I mean, forget all. She also says a whole bunch of stupid anti-Semitic things. She doesn't understand history. She doesn't seem to understand how government works. She is very popular because she is willing to say certain things that are universal truths. And because of her gender and her skin color. That's just it. Just be honest. She doesn't bring deep insights to things. I like the work she's trying to do as far as the Blexit movement. But that does not imbue, and it's what our side does all the time. Somebody says a couple of things that you like, and then they elevate it, put them on the shoulder. Oh, my God, it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. The history of CPAC, for example, is one of bringing in young people who had a video go viral or whatever. Oh, look at this. They said something conservative. Let's get them a primetime speaking spot at CPAC. And, oh, they're the future of the movement. And then they finish puberty and whatever, and half of them turn into left-wing nut jobs. Because the indoctrination machine works. It works. And so what are you? You gave the left somebody to go, aha, look, see, this person rejected conservatism. Look at him. And you just use him to make... How about you just wait and you celebrate what somebody says or somebody does. Accomplishment. Achievement. Actions rather than existence. Stop celebrating existence. Everybody does it. It's nothing worthwhile. You don't get a trophy for existence, or at least you shouldn't. It's the ultimate participation ribbon because everybody literally does it. You didn't even have to sign up for a team and suck at the sport to do that. But you're sitting there going, oh, no, this person is really a man. Oh, God. Is this the important issue of the day? She is a woman, first of all. Secondly, is that the... Who cares, honestly, what's going on in France? In the France, in the grand scheme of our election right now. But some people dine out on controversy. Their brand is controversy. Whether or not it has a purpose. There's a big difference. Anybody can be controversial. Can you have a point behind it? Can you advance anything other than your bottom line through it? All the anti-Semitic garbage that she spews and like, okay, this is profoundly unhelpful and wildly ignorant. Shouldn't you, I don't know, become educated? You have access to all the information the human being, the human species has ever created. And you're out here spewing left-wing garbage. She's a former left-winger. She's not really rooted in conservatism. I can't say that she does it because it's a way to make money, but I can say that she doesn't do it with a whole lot of thought behind it. There's something to be said for flying by the seat of your pants and going with your instincts. But at a certain point, after a whole series of destruction in your wake, should you not at some point go, maybe I should think this one through? And if you think that calling the First Lady of France a transvestite or whatever is helpful for anything, you're not paying attention. Best case scenario, what comes of this? Where does it come? It doesn't come from anywhere. How does it help anything? It doesn't help anything. You go down the rabbit hole of the internet and you don't question anything. I'd just say that you were stupid. She wrote, "This episode is blowing up, so I just want to say after looking into this, I would stake my entire professional reputation on the fact that Brigitte Macron is in fact a man. Any journalist or publication that is trying to dismiss this plausibility is immediately identifiable as establishment. I have never seen anything like this in my life. The implications here are terrifying." See, that's what it's all about. There's very little difference between Candace Owens doing a show for the express purpose of causing outrage to get attention and, say, some YouTuber. I just saw a video over the weekend of some YouTuber who was getting the crap beat out of him at an airport because he was pulling a stealing luggage prank. I don't know. It's a subgenre of stupidity on YouTube that I am unfamiliar with and proudly so. But like, oh, the prank goes horribly wrong. Like, what happens if the prank goes right? How does a prank like that go? How is it a prank? Stealing? Oh, well, ultimately, we're going to give it back to them. Okay. Once the person says, hey, that's my luggage, stop it. You don't go, well, I'm pot committed to this, and grab onto the guy and refuse to let go. Yet that's what this person did. And that was considered a prank. Well, this is beyond a prank. This is just plain stupid. This is look at me. This is I haven't made headlines in a while, so I'm going to do things to make headlines. I am going to get attention for attention's sake. Now, you could do something. She has a large audience. She could do something constructive. She could do something helpful. She could do something smart. She chose to do something easy. Look, it's super easy to be shocking for its own sake. It's much more difficult to do something intelligent for a purpose, right? That it isn't its own sake. One of the things that drove me nuts as a kid, still drives me nuts today, especially when I was doing plays and stuff. There are all these people like, I'm so weird. I'm so weird. I'm so weird, 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 weird. And they just would broadcast, they're weird. That was how they were weird, is they declared themselves to be weird. And so anything, they'd wear I'm weird t-shirts and they'd do things that you'd sit there and you go, you're just doing this because you think it's weird. You're doing it for attention. You're a bit of an attention whore. The genuinely weird people were just weird. You don't need to broadcast it. You just are. People didn't notice it necessarily or whatever, or they did. It didn't matter. The genuinely weird people didn't care what other people thought. Whereas the people who were being performance artists before you could become a social media whore and get attention that way were just going, that was their version of it. Is I'm weird, I'm weird. Hey, everybody, look at me. I'm weird. When they weren't weird. They were conventional. They were desperate for attention. They probably weren't getting it from home. Parents more likely didn't like them. And honestly, I could see why. If that were the case, I could look at them and go, yeah, I get it. Not a big fan either. But you sit there and you realize, what weird for what purpose? Weird for its own sake is immature. Weird because that's what it is. That's the way you are. That's what you think. You're just, you view things differently. That can actually be something. Now, in the internet age, it's just get attention. This is one of the things I wrote about in my book, is once we destroyed the line between famous and infamous, everything changed. Everything kind of started to go to hell. It wasn't about, you never wanted to be, you wanted to be famous. Everybody at one point or another thought, oh, it'd be cool to be famous. Nobody thought, man, it'd be really cool to be infamous. Infamous is easy. Infamous requires no work. Infamous requires you to do something horrible. Do something massive, whatever. It's just, you do something horrible. Drive a busload of kids off into a quarry, and you now are infamous. Smear feces all over yourself and dance in the middle of an intersection. You're now kind of infamous. Videotape it. There you go. There's the guy who did that. Hey, everybody, subscribe to his YouTube channel. Famous was you had to accomplish something. You had to do something. You had to achieve something. You had to work for something. Well, now society just rewards the attention. It doesn't care how you get the attention. So you can say wildly stupid things, incendiary things, for the sake of them that you clearly don't believe, you know aren't true, unless you're wildly stupid. And you get the attention for it. And that's it. And attention equals money. It's sad, but it's true. I don't particularly care what Candace Owens says, except for the fact that she has been built up like people who lost elections, like other people who never really accomplished anything, but because of they got enough attention, they've been built up as some sort of leader. They're not a leader. If you can't articulate a clear vision in a belief system or not make yourself look like a fool or dance around like an idiot to get attention, you're not a thought leader in any way, shape, or form. You get attention. That's it. Congratulations. But if you care at all about the cause you claim to care about and milk for a lot of money, you should probably, I don't know, try a little bit to help the cause. Is that too much to ask? Apparently it is with her. All right, so like I said, we've been talking about the Daily Wire. Let's talk about the Daily Wire. Let's talk about Ben Shapiro now, because Candace Owens isn't the only problem over there. Because I woke up this morning, or maybe it was because I went to, or before I went to bed last night, whatever it was, I wake up to this video of Ben Shapiro going off about the retirement age. Now, that's a legitimate concern. 65, they're going to raise it to 67 soon, and it should go a little bit higher because life expectancy is going longer and longer. And to it's not life expectancy. Let me qualify that, because Ben talks about life expectancy. When Social Security was started, the average life expectancy was 62, 63 years old. And, of course, you could have to be 65 to qualify for Social Security. And that's all well and good. It's a statement of fact. It's not really in dispute, but it's a little bit misleading in that most people don't realize that life expectancy was lower. Now, people are living longer now. Don't get me wrong. But not by like 20 years. It is that we have done such a great job with infant mortality, right? Infant mortality. A baby dies. My mother had two siblings at least that didn't make it past infancy. And then one lived till like four, whatever, had cystic fibrosis and died horribly. It was not all that uncommon back then. So if somebody is born and dies, and we didn't have the prenatal care, we didn't have the understanding of the body that we do now. If somebody's born and dies at a very young age, 1 month, 2 months, something like that, that really cuts into life expectancy. And back then, you'd be hard-pressed to find a family that didn't have a couple of children that didn't make it into their teenage years. It wouldn't happen. So life expectancy went up, not because we've extended life at the end as much as it is we've preserved and protected life at the beginning. We've made life possible. A baby born at 5 months back in the 30s, there was nothing they could do. It just wasn't going to survive. Now they can do all sorts of things, and we move heaven and earth to protect that life, and people live through that. So that increases life expectancy. What you really want to look at is life past, say, 60. How long people live past 60. That'll give you a better indication of the life expectancy and where we are as a society. That's neither here nor there. But in watch, it's one of the things Ben addresses in this video. But then he goes on to say that people shouldn't, the concept of retirement is absurd, which is absurd in and of itself, and something that, look, I know Ben a little bit. I don't know him very well. I know people who do know him very well. They swear that he's a very nice guy. I have no reason to doubt that. But he's been a nationally syndicated columnist. And like his shtick, his gimmick was that he was 14 years old. So he's a nationally syndicated columnist at 14 years old. He went to Harvard. He had, you know, graduated school early. He went to Harvard sometime around 14 or something like that. Whatever it is. I don't know his biography. I'm not his biographer. But it's impressive. On paper, it's impressive. But you don't really build up a lot of life experience. That, at least not a lot of common life experience that way. So that when it comes time for you to enter the workforce, you've already entered the workforce. You have your entire life held jobs that you have to shower for rather than shower from. And there are two different worlds in the jobs that you have to shower for and the jobs you have to shower from. Two vastly different existences for the worlds, the jobs you have to shower for rather than shower from. And so it's really easy to say the concept of retirement is ridiculous when you sit on your ass all day and talk for a living and you make millions and millions and millions of dollars. It's really easy to say that, especially if you've never had any. If you're since 14, your job is writing, your job is talking, your job is writing and talking, and that's it. As somebody who's had those jobs and had the jobs where you roof for 10 hours a day, I tell you, they're two different worlds. One is much posher than the other one. So to sit there and say nobody should retire, the concept of retirement is ridiculous, is dramatically out of touch with reality for the vast majority of Americans. The vast majority of Americans don't go to college. They don't necessarily do menial backbreaking work, but a lot of them do backbreaking work. It's not menial. It's meaningful. But if you've never done it, you don't look at it as meaningful. You look at it as menial. I can tell you, you get a weird sense of satisfaction that you don't find in writing a column when you look back on a roof that you put on a building. I still, when I drive around Detroit to this day, I'll go past a building in a depressed area of the city. That's where we worked. And point out, I put the roof on that building. It's a point of pride. I did that. There's tangible proof that I existed. It's not just me tilting at windmills. It's not me talking out into the ether. It is not me speaking into a microphone and unaware whether or not anybody's listening. It's there. You can't deny it. It's right there. It's not as much fun, but it was fun. You find really it causes you to have to become informed Because you got to pass the time. You got to talk to somebody. You can't just spend 10 hours burning down roof or mopping down tar or hammering down shingles without talking to the people you work with. And you, every single day, you got to find a way to have something to talk about for those hours that you're working. And you learn a lot about people. You learn a lot about things. You learn a lot about yourself in doing those jobs. Not that you can't learn a lot about yourself while writing and things like that too, but it's different. It's a different world. And that world is bigger than the writing world. The sweating from work world is much bigger than the sweating from nerves world. And so the one has been having lived in it his whole life, and the other one has the vast majority of people out there. Now, we're at a time when there's a realignment happening, when the Republican Party is sort of becoming the party of the blue-collar working class. Again, the Democrats are going for the rich. Stuff like what you're going to hear Ben say undercuts that, it kneecaps it. All right, so Ben Shapiro, I want to play you this audio because you just... Only somebody who's never done it could say this, and he hasn't thought it through. And that's really a lot of the problem here is it's the no life experience and the no rational thought, the no, that you can't, you can talk about what you don't know. You can talk about all sorts of things you don't know. You can, as long as you couch it that way, because I'm not really sure about this. I'm not really sure. Instead, he makes declarative statements off the top of his head that are counterproductive. Now, if you're a roofer, if you're a construction guy, if you're a concrete person, if you are somebody who really breaks your ass working physical labor for 30, 40 years, to hear somebody who talks for a living say, and, you know, a leading voice in conservatism say, yeah, you shouldn't retire. There's no reason. If you retire, you're going to die. It's somebody who doesn't wake up in the morning in, you know, going, oh, man, I really feel that job yesterday. When I worked concrete, broke up driveways, laying the concrete was fine. It's just dumping and smoothing after it's been framed out and everything. But it breaking up the concrete, whether you're using the jackhammer or you're using a sledgehammer, it will hurt the next day. Not forever, not for the rest of your life, unless something goes horribly wrong. But like, it's one of those things you're like, oh, man. Now, you do that day in, day out, week in, week out for years. You want to get the hell out of there as quickly as possible. Retirement is not, and I say this, my dad retired. My dad was retired longer than he worked. He was on General Motors. He worked other jobs. He didn't retire because he needed the money. But for health benefit reasons for my mother, he had to retire as soon as he possibly could, because according to the union rules, if he had continued to work, he would have gotten a bigger pension. He didn't get a very big pension, but he would have got a bigger pension. But if he had died while he was still working, my mother would have only gotten his health insurance for 6 months. Whereas if he was retired and died, my mother would have gotten his health insurance for the rest of her life, which my mother had a lot of health problems. So that was very important. You make those kind of decisions. But when you hear this, you sit there and you go, somebody like my dad, somebody maybe like your dad or your mom, this turns people off. This turns people off. There are ways to make the argument that Ben's trying to make here, I suppose, without doing it the way Ben did, without turning people off. Well, I'm over. Listen to it for yourself.
And let's be real about this. It's insane that we haven't raised the retirement age in the United States. It's totally crazy. Joe Biden, if that were the case, Joe Biden should not be running for president. Hey, Joe Biden is 81 years old. The retirement age in the United States at which you start to receive Social Security and you are eligible for Medicare is 65. Joe Biden has technically been eligible for Social Security and Medicare for 16 years, and he wants to continue in office until he is 86, which is 19 years past when he would be eligible for retirement. No one in the United States should be retiring at 65 years old. Frankly, I think retirement itself is a stupid idea unless you have some sort of health problem. Everybody that I know who is who is elderly, who has retired, is dead within 5 years. And if you talk to people who are elderly and they lose their purpose in life by losing their job and they stop working, things go to hell in a handbasket real quick. But put all of that aside, just on a fiscal level and on a logical level. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt established 65 as the retirement age, the average life expectancy in the United States was 63 years old. Today, the average life expectancy in the United States is close to 80. It's totally insane that you believe that you should be able to work from the time that you are essentially 20 to the time that you are 65, which is a 45-year period, pay in, and then you will receive Social Security benefits sufficient to support you and your family, you and your wife or whatever, for like another 20 years. That's crazy talk. That is not fiscally sustainable. The notion that if you have to raise the retirement age to 67 or 68, that everyone is going to fall apart. My parents are that age. My parents are not retired. And they shouldn't retire. It would be very bad for them to retire. By the way, it's disrespectful to people who are 67, 68, 69 years old to suggest that they are in the same shape as people who are 65 were in 1940. It's not true at all. Have you met a 65-year-old lately? 65-year-olds are not old in the United States. They're not. 68-year-olds are not old in the United States. Again, Joe Biden thinks he's not old, and that dude is running for president again, and that dude actually is old, and he's 81. I failed to see how a country in which our entire leadership class is 80-plus is telling you that we should have a retirement age of 65. It makes no sense at all.
Makes no sense at all unless you live in the real world. It makes no sense at all unless you live in existence that people do, that normal people do. The people Ben talk about, I bet you. I don't know for sure, but I would bet you that the people Ben talking about, they die 5 years after, they die, are like college professors, right? College professors work until they're 85 years old, and then they'll retire, and then they die. It happens all the time. Not that they'll die, like that's not the way to die or whatever, but that happens all the time. And you sit there and you go, huh, they should have, you know, the work kept them alive. I don't know that the work kept them alive. I don't know that the work didn't keep them alive. I've thought that myself, too. You know, all the work kept them alive. You see senators all the time. They finally retire, and then within 6 months, they die, and you go, oh, man, the work kept them alive. If they hadn't retired, they would have lived. That's simplistic. There's no way to prove that whatsoever. You're going to die at some point. Everybody's clock runs out. But to sit there and try and pass that off the same, well, he's a college professor for 30 years. Okay, great. A college professor for 30 years. What about somebody, you know, working construction for 30 years? They should not retire. What if they plan for it? What if they took care of it? What if they, whatever, the union deal allowed for it, whatever it is. People listening to that, honest blue-collar workers listening to that are going to be pissed off, going, where the hell does this guy get off telling me, don't retire. You're an idiot if you retire. You shouldn't retire. Retiring concept. Yeah, it's great. You have all the free time. You work 3 hours a day to do your radio show, or what I think his podcast is like an hour. I don't even know what it is, to be honest with you. But you don't, you're not working 8-10 hours. Overtime, the concept of overtime is not, it doesn't exist in podcasting. He's not the editor-in-chief anymore of the Daily Wire, so he's not doing that on a daily basis. His job is to do his show. His job is to be Ben Shapiro. It's a pretty good job. If you were paid millions of dollars to be you, I bet you'd take that job. And you probably wouldn't retire, at least not for a long, long time. You wouldn't even entertain the idea because you're making a lot of money being yourself. But the physical manual labor people, the people who work in an office, the people who report to other people, they want to retire. They want to be able to spend more time with their family. If you're making millions of dollars, you're already able to spend time with your family. You're the boss. Are you going to deny your vacation? Hey, I want to take 3 weeks off to take a cruise. No, I'm sorry. We can't lose me for that long. Oh, come on, man. Don't be such a hard-ass. That's not a conversation anybody has. So the average American listening to this thing, like I say, most people don't go to college. Most people didn't go to college. The average American listening to this thing is going, what the hell? Don't retire. You shouldn't be allowed to retire. It'll be twisted into you shouldn't be allowed to retire. Social Security's got to go away. You need to work your whole... No. I get it. Social Security's going broke. The government set up a Ponzi scheme. The government doesn't admit that it's a Ponzi scheme, but it is a Ponzi scheme. The government is screwing everybody over. It is, you know, part of the reason why they love having the illegal aliens come in is because we need somebody to do the work to pay the taxes to be able to keep the Ponzi scheme going, right? I bet near the end, Bernie Madoff wasn't particular about, or as particular as he was at the beginning, of where he was getting the money from, where the investments were coming from, where the suckers were coming in from. In the beginning, he could be discerning. Hey, you know what? I don't want this thing to get too big, blah, blah, blah. At the end, he's like, I just need cash. I need cash. I need it quick. Let's go. That's how our government is. But to sit there and tell hardworking people, yeah, you shouldn't retire. There shouldn't be any retirement. You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that, is destructive to the cause that you claim to care deeply about. The cause that, by the way, has made you fabulously wealthy. Let's just put it that way. It's made you fabulously wealthy. And then you end up doing something that is destructive to that. Wildly destructive to that. And you sit there and you wonder why it is we lose, why it is we can't get on the same page, why it is the conservative movement has problems. I get it. You're flying by the seat of your pants. Ben is smarter than that. Ben is not, he's making it up as he goes largely, but he's smart enough to be able to know where he's going. He's not just hopping in a car and just go, not looking, not just, let's see where this thing takes me. It's not that way. Only somebody who's out of touch could make that argument. Only somebody who's never really had a job that you can't wait to get off from. You know, they said this the other day about the Democrats not understanding middle America. People just want to be left alone. The blue-collar America, they've lost touch with it. They are now the coastal elite party. They don't get it. That most people just want to, they don't want to be billionaires. They'd love to be. If you gave them $1 billion, they're not going to go, no, 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 please. I have enough. But they are content in their lives, particularly before social media, particularly before reality TV, where reality TV seems to be designed for the express purpose of making everybody go, look at what I have that you don't have. Trying to make everybody jealous, trying to make everybody angry about what you don't have. The politics of envy. Well, there's an opposite side of that. And it's the politics of elitism. That's what Republicans are always accused of. The Democrats roll with the billionaires. The Democrats roll with the rich. The Democrats are neck deep in money constantly, but it is the conservatives who are always accused of being the elite, out of touch snobs, blah, blah, blah. They wear, you know, pajamas to bed and wear a tie with a pocket square to bed, etc., etc. That is changing now. That is changing now. Donald Trump, oddly enough, it took a billionaire to really change the dynamics of politics. Not because, like, Democrats were turning off these people for a long time. Since they nominated John Kerry, maybe even Al Gore, but John Kerry for sure, they've sort of edged towards the party of the elite. Barack Obama was completely the party of the elite. He wanted to bask in their glory, and they loved basking him in their existence. But the blue-collar worker hadn't really sort of abandoned. They didn't feel welcome in the Republican Party, and they were beginning to feel unwelcome in the Democratic Party. Donald Trump, billionaire, who owns a mansion and a yacht, oddly enough, took the whole thing and said, you know, let's turn it on its head. And he became somebody who, my dad drove forklift for 30 years for General Motors, thought he understood him. But Donald Trump understood him. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I mean, Donald Trump was around a lot of construction guys his whole life. But it's different when you're one of the construction guys versus you're the boss, the owner of the company. But he knew how to talk to them. He knew where they come from because he'd heard them before in nature, not as part of a focus group. And people started, it started off with the white blue-collar workers, and then it shifted, and Donald Trump did much better with black and brown voters in 2020 than he did in 2016. We'll see what happens in 2024. Sadly, a bunch of wealthy white suburban women have moved in the other direction. People who would listen to what Ben Shapiro said and make it make perfect sense. They're making a lot of money, or their families are making a lot of money. Why would they quit? Why would they retire? Why would they do that? The work isn't that hard. It's not that demanding. Why wouldn't we continue down this road? And you lose touch with the reality of other people. It's unhelpful, to say the least, to broadcast that. Wildly unhelpful to say that. And not that Ben said it, it's that Ben didn't catch that he said it, I think is the problem. I hope he comes out and somehow tries to clean that up a little bit, because you're going to run risk of turning off people. That, you know, you'll be the belle of the ball and at the country club and whatever, and the fancy steakhouses. But when you go to the Outback, those are the people that make differences in elections. It's not my favorite thing to sit there and criticize people. Now, Candace Owens is a little bit different. I don't know that she's particularly helpful. I don't really think of her as a conservative or whatever. She does what she does. She does what she is, who she is, quite effectively. But Ben is much bigger, much more important, and we need him to, everybody, it's going to be a tough, tough election. Let's just be honest. There are a lot of people who recognize that Joe Biden has been a horrible president, who will still, nevertheless, vote for him because they hate Donald Trump. The best you can hope for with those people is not that you're going to convince them over. They know how bad the economy is. They know how bad things are. They get it. They live it. They go to the grocery store, too. But the best you can hope for is they just go, well, I'm not going to vote for any of them, or I'm going to vote for Robert Kennedy or something like that. They're not going to go, you know what, I hate Donald Trump, but I'm going to vote for him. That's just not going to happen. I'm not talking about 40% of the population. 40% of the population are Democrats. They're never going to vote for Donald Trump. I'm talking about probably 20% of the 5% of the people who are going to decide the election. Those people. Some of those people, you're just never going to reach. It doesn't matter how bad it is. I'll never forget a friend who disowned me because of politics. Disowned me because of my politics. We had a big fight, et cetera, et cetera. And then we got into a fight about Iraq. And he was like, oh, we're all to blame. And the people don't hate us over there. And we deserve the hate we get and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, you know what? I tell you what. Yeah, I'll pay to fly you over there. I'll raise the money. I'll pay to fly you over to Iraq. And you go and explain it to these people, these insurgents, about how it's not all Americans and we're really in solidarity with them. And I said, as an added bonus, I'll even pay to fly your body back. And he hung up on me. And I think that might have been the last time we talked. The way it is. But he took a job in the late 90s when I was in college. He took a job. He worked for a record label. And he had a pretty good gig. He abused the hell out of the corporate Amex card at the bars. That much I can vouch for. But he had a good gig at a record label. And he left that job for a higher paying job in some office. I don't even know what it was. But I knew that he wasn't qualified for the job. He just wasn't qualified for the job. Back then, I don't even know if it's the same now, but they always wanted to know, are you proficient in Office? Can you do Excel and Access and spreadsheets and blah, 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 blah? And he lied about being able to do that. And I mean, everybody kind of had messed around with those programs. So it wasn't like they were completely unfamiliar, but expert, the ability to sit down day one and set up a spreadsheet? No. Still to this day, I couldn't do it. But he had a 90-day probationary period. And at the end of it, they fired him. They let him go. It wasn't working out. because he didn't really take the time to look. If you've got a 90-day respite, a 90-day window where you're going to, you have to learn how to use Excel, make an Excel spreadsheet, or else you, because it's a crucial part of your job, wouldn't you then, I don't know, use those 90 days or at least use 30 of those days to figure it out, to work on it, to try and get it done? He didn't. And he lost his job, and he couldn't go back to his old job. They already replaced him, or they'd whatever, gotten rid of the position or whatever it was, but he couldn't go back. And so he spent a long time. He never went to college, wasn't a particularly good student, and his whole resume was like independent record stores and this one record company as a rep. So he wasn't very deep. He was going to have to take an entry-level job somewhere if he was going to get a job. He's going to have to get a job in the interim while he's looking for a better, more upwardly mobile job, as everybody has to do. But he just wasn't super motivated. He had a girlfriend he was living with at the time who was paying the bills, and so that allowed him the ability to work part-time. He had a whole bunch of CDs that he could sell and rare music. He had a lot of stuff he could make liquid. So he didn't have to really find a job all that hard. And it took him a long time to find. He'd find one, then he'd lose it or hate it or whatever. He had, it just went on for a very long time. But he ended up blaming George W. Bush for it. I can't find anything in Bush's economy. Blah, blah, blah. Angry, angry, angry. Even though all of his employment problems started under Bill Clinton. He was just a committed leftist. There was no point in trying to talk to him about it because it was George W. Bush's fault. Not his fault for lying about being able to do certain programs on a computer. Not his fault for not taking the 90 days to learn how to do those programs. It was all George, Bush's economy. What do you expect? Blah, 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 blah. And like that person, that's what we're up against. The best you can hope for with someone like that is never, you're never going to get him to go, oh, yeah, I get it now. Now I understand, and I will vote for the Republican nominee. He, I don't know this for sure, but if I had to guess, he's got a Joe Biden flag on his rented house. And it's dilapidated. That would be my guess. I can't imagine things have changed. I would have heard, I suppose, if things had changed. I can't tell because he blocked me on Facebook when I told him that I'd fly his body back from Iraq. But that's beside the point. You're not going to reach that guy. You're not going to win people like that over, but you can. They can look at Joe Biden and be as disgusted by it and just go, I'm going to vote for Robert Kennedy. I'm going to vote for, you know, Cornel West. I'm going to vote. That's what you can hope for. But if you start belittling their work, and their existence, the way they get by, telling, I shouldn't retire. Nobody should retire. Blah, blah, blah. You're not doing it. Then you're going to lose them. Then they'll vote against you, vote for somebody to vote against you that they otherwise wouldn't vote for out of spite. That's why it's important to point out what Ben said was so wrong. Let us move on from criticism on the right and over to where it belongs, back with the left and Joy Reid. Joy Reid had on Raphael Warnock. The Reverend Raphael Warnock. It's amazing how many reverends are married multiple times. I don't know. Maybe it's the Catholic in me. But anybody who's like a reverend who's married seems weird. Anybody, but then it's like, then you're divorced. Al Sharpton. A reverend in name only. Let's be honest about it. But at least Raphael Warnock had a church for a while. He made a lot of money. He's still getting paid a lot by that church. But, in a total, complete scam. But he can get away with that because he's a Democrat. So it's okay. But he was on with Joy Reid, and they're talking about, see, Warnock is senator from Georgia. Shouldn't be, but he is. And they were talking about Laken Riley. Now, I want you to hear the condescension in Joy Reid's voice and the anger in Joy Reid's voice. She's she doesn't give a damn about Laken Riley. And she is reluctantly having to talk about Laken Riley because she can't. The Democrats have two modes: deny and then attack. They will deny as long as they can. And if they don't ever have to attack, that's fine. They won't attack. But they just don't want you to know about it. They don't want their audience to know about it. They don't want their audience to think about certain stories. And so they'll just deny it. They'll pretend it doesn't exist. They're just la-di-da going on about their business like it doesn't happen. And then when they have to, when they can't, when they realize that they can't ignore it into existence, that something else isn't going to come along and take it over, because the American people, not just right-wing wacko conservatives, but the American people are pissed off at the Biden administration and Democrats for allowing illegal aliens into the country. They're pissed off. The personification of this, the crystallization of this, is the murder of Lake and Riley. But people were pissed off about immigration before this. Now they have a face to it. Now they have a person to point to and say, this person would be alive were it not for these policies. And so Democrats have to kind of address it. They have to. Weirdly, Joe Biden has really only addressed it at the State of the Union, and then he spent his time apologizing for saying illegal, but it didn't go away. Joe can't address it because he doesn't have the mental capacity to address it in any meaningful way. That means that his lapdogs in the media have to step up, and this is how they choose to do it. Listen to the just anger and the lie. We'll cover the lies in a second. I want you to hear how Joy Reid talks about this murdered 22-year-old nursing student.
Ask you another question, because we know that one of the ways that Donald Trump and Republicans are hoping to demagogue their way back into, you know, control of the White House and to hold on to control of the Senate, I mean, control of the House and gain control of the Senate, is the immigration issue. And they've been truly demagoguing an issue of a Georgia young woman who was killed, a Georgia young nursing student named Laken Riley. They've now passed a law called the Laken Riley Act. All Republican members and 37 Democrats voted in the House to support the bill. The legislation requires the detention of any migrant who's been accused of burglary or theft. My understanding is that burglary and theft are already illegal. What does this law add to the current existing law? Is it just a messaging bill? Does it do anything or change anything? I will note for our audience that overall crime is down this year across this country. And migrant crime is negligible. Crime by migrants is negligible. What does this law do? Does it do anything?
Oh, it's all, there's so many lies in there, it's difficult to unpack them all. Oh, overall crime is down. Yeah, violent crime is up. Violent crime, murder, sexual assault, plain old assault, up. Up a lot. Robbery is down because nobody's bothering to report it because Democrat prosecutors aren't going to prosecute it. Why would you bother reporting something if the police are going to go, yeah, I'm going to come and fill out the paperwork. I'm going to waste your time. We're wasting my time. I'm going to go and throw this onto a big pile of stuff, and nobody's going to bother paying attention to it. Nobody's going to do this, that, or the other thing, and we just move on. We're never going to find your stuff. We're not even going to look. Who are we kidding? So if your car is broken into, your car is stolen, you got to file a police report. Your car is broken into... You don't. You can, if your insurance company will probably let you slide, you don't have to file a police report if somebody broke a window or something. They just won't. They don't care. The police aren't going to come and go, well, we're going to move heaven and earth. We're going to canvas this neighborhood and see if anybody has any Ring door cameras, see if we can catch anything on those things, track down everything and whatever. No, they're not interested. They're not doing it. Because even if they found the person, they're not going to prosecute them. The Soros prosecutor is going to go, it's just a quality of life crime, property. We don't want to do that. It's wrong. Too many people are in prison. Yeah, too many people are committing crimes. The people who are in prison deserve to be in prison. They're committing crimes. They're not of that mindset over there on the left. They look at it and go, the school-to-prison pipeline, far too many black and brown people are being criminalized. No, no, no. I mean, you want to talk about it. Let's say that far too many people are committing crimes, and then let's talk about why they're committing crimes. And maybe it has something to do with you guys on the left sitting there telling them, you're never going to get ahead. This country sucks. It's stacked against you. You're never going to get ahead. Forget it, kid. It's not going to work out for you. All your dreams and hopes, nah. Let me flush those down the toilet real quick. Maybe that has something to do with it. You sap people of their hope. And guess what happens? You get a whole bunch of hopeless people who will turn to whatever and feel justified in it. Well, you know, society's screwing me over. I can screw over society. that sort of mentality, as exemplified by Joy Reid. It's not her personal life story. She's, you know, buck the system is rigged. Well, how did somebody as untalented and unbright as you manage to make millions of dollars on television? It's different when I do it. Yeah, if the system's rigged to keep people like you down, why aren't you down? Joy, got an answer? No, she doesn't. And notice she doesn't explain what happened to Lake and Riley. It's just this young 22-year-old nursing student who was killed. Oh, okay. There you go. I suppose that's something. She's bludgeoned to death by an illegal alien to the point that her skull was fractured and deformed, grotesquely. But yeah, it's just, you know, just killed by somebody who's an undocumented migrant, a new American, a new arrival, an unregistered Democrat as of yet. And the Lake and Riley Act would require people who have run-ins with illegal aliens, who have run-ins with police, to be held in custody. Because property crimes, theft, robbery, endangerment of children, those are crimes. And if you're going to commit them and you have no, you know, it's kind of funny. The left desperately wants Donald Trump. They wanted Donald Trump to be held. They wanted him to be held in prison, especially on the stuff in Georgia and the documents case. They was, oh, he's a flight risk. He's a flight risk. And it's like, you know, he's the most recognizable human being on the planet, right? Now, could he hop into his jet and fly off somewhere? I suppose, theoretically. But is he likely to? Not really. But somehow, they think that people who are in this country illegally, who have zero roots whatsoever, no business being in the country at all, that they're going to stick around for their court, because they're living under the delusion that, well, in 6 or 7 years, they're going to show up to their immigration court date. They're not going to do that. So why would they stick around for their felony court date, right? Worst case scenario, in their immigration court date, they're ordered removed from the country. They're ordered deported, which they could still flee, by the way. They're not immediately deported. But criminal charges, they risk jail. Well, if you have, you know, are you using a real name? Who knows? Are you do whatever. If you'd have no respect for the laws and the sovereignty of this country, and you break the law New York, say, by fighting police officers, then you can go and you can hop on a bus to California, get off anywhere across the country you want, because you don't care. You're supposed to be in court next Tuesday. I'm not going to court next Tuesday. To hell with that. They let me out. And oh, by the way, the guy who killed Lake and Riley had run-ins with police in New York City for endangering a child and in Georgia for theft, for shoplifting. Or maybe it was even burglary. Whatever it was, they could have and would have a few years ago held him without bail, or held him and he'd have to post bail, have to come up with some money, and he probably wouldn't have been able to. Then ICE might have come along and kept an eye on him, and the second they were done with him in the court system and he was done with his sentence, they would have deported him, none of which happens anymore. But they didn't hold him in any case for ICE. They did not let ICE know that this sweet, sweet, nourishing illegal alien had done anything wrong, because can they really do anything wrong? I don't think they can really do anything wrong in the eyes of the left. And so this bill says no, if you could, because you escalate. I don't think anybody starts at murder. I think you start with crime, and then you commit an act of violence in the commission of the crime, and then the violence escalates, and then maybe you kill somebody, and maybe you feel bad about it, maybe you don't. But once you do that, then it's easier to do it again. I can't imagine a world where this guy who bludgeoned Lake and Riley to death, that was his first violent crime. I just can't imagine that world. I don't believe that for a second. It might be the first one for which he's been caught or charged or anybody noticed, but there is no way that he does not have something in his background. People just don't go, you know what I'm going to do today is I'm going to beat somebody to death. Just like I don't believe Hunter Biden at age 40 decided, you know what, I'm a well-adjusted guy, my parents love me, I'm having a wonderful life, but I've always wished that I could go down the death spiral of being a crack addict and sleep with a bunch of prostitutes. So that's my New Year's resolution. A midlife crisis is buying a Porsche or, you know, whatever. It is not going down a crack death spiral. You'd been getting away with it and doing things your whole damn life. And it just escalated to that point, be it any sort of crime. So, as you listen to Joy Reid, the contempt she holds Lake and Riley, and anybody who cares about Lake, Republicans couldn't possibly care about Lake and Riley. They couldn't possibly care about Lake and Riley. They're using her. They're exploiting her death. That's all they're doing, is exploiting her death. Because she doesn't care. She can't imagine anybody cares. But she'll get teary-eyed over the thought of George Floyd. Oh, George Floyd, this saint. I guarantee you, if George Floyd were standing outside Joy Reid's building in Manhattan, she would alert the doorman. There's a guy out there. It looks like he's on drugs. Why don't you? And don't call the police just yet, but keep an eye on him. And she'd cross the street to get away from him. Actually, she'd summon her town car quickly to open the door so she didn't have to deal with him. She would have wanted nothing to do with George Floyd in the wild at all. But when George Floyd dies of an overdose in police custody, he's like, oh, he's just a saint. He's a wonderful father. He's a wonderful this. And of course, those evil police murdered him, robbing society of such a wonderful choice human being. Cared very deeply about Michael Brown perpetrating the hands up, don't shoot myth. Lie. It's not even a myth. It's a lie. When you tell a myth is nobody really knows, but you know, did George Washington really chop down a cherry tree? Probably not, but you can't really prove he didn't. You can't prove he did, but you can't prove he didn't. He probably didn't. It's one of those kind of stories that seems a little too on the nose, but it became a part of the myth, a part of the urban legend. Hands up, don't shoot is not that. We know that hands up, don't shoot didn't happen. Michael Brown's friend, who was there with him, who was involved in the robbery with him, said it didn't happen. Michael Brown was shot in the hand. He had powder burns on his hand because the gun went off as he was trying to wrestle it away from the police officer. And then he was charging at the police officer when he was shot and killed. There was no hands up, don't shoot. That was a lie, a witness told, that was too good to not repeat. Joy Reid repeated it. Joy Reid lived it, loved it, probably sold t-shirts and mugs with it written on it. But when it comes to Lake and Riley, she doesn't care. It's just Republicans are trying to exploit. They're mad at Lake and Riley for being murdered because Republicans are drawing attention to her murder. You imagine that? Now, Raphael Warnock, the Reverend Warnock, I should say, man of God, he has an answer. And he pays lip service at the beginning. You're going to listen to this clip. And Warnock is like, oh, my heart goes out to the family, blah, blah. And then he just immediately starts dumping on everything related to Lake and Riley. Now, what are we told by these very same people when there is a shooting somewhere? They want to demonize all gun owners. They want to demonize the inanimate object. They want to ban the inanimate object. And they want to punish stripping the rights of people who didn't do anything for it. They want to do that, and they offer that up before there's even an accurate body count or an accounting of what had happened there, and you find out that it's a trans shooter, and they go, all right, let's just pretend that didn't happen, and they move on. But Republicans will say, our hopes and prayers, their thoughts and prayers go out to the family, and the left will go, thoughts and prayers aren't enough. Thoughts and prayers are nothing. Thoughts and prayers are nothing. Raphael Warnock, a man of God, doesn't even says prayers. He's a man of God, in quotes. He's a Democrat. He doesn't even offer the prayers. He just goes, yeah, no, our hearts go out there. That's a shame. That's a real shame. And then he immediately goes into, he's got to attack Republicans. Doesn't really sound like your hearts are going out to the Riley family there, Reverend. At least not to me.
Let me first of all just say that my heart goes out to this young woman's family. Lakin Riley did not deserve what happened to her. To answer your question succinctly, this is smoke and mirrors by people who are not serious. We had a bipartisan piece of legislation in front of us. It had a lot of provisions, some provisions that some folks on my side didn't like. But the only way to get comprehensive immigration reform, the only way to address the current crisis on the border in divided government is on a bipartisan basis. And so rather than demagoguing this tragic death by this young woman, they ought to get serious. And let's pass some bipartisan legislation and deal with the crisis at the border.
Now, does it sound like he cares? Man of cloth! The right Reverend. The right Reverend Raphael Warnock. Doesn't mention God. Doesn't mention prayer. She didn't deserve what happened to her. Oh, you're going out on a limb there, Rafi, saying that she didn't deserve to be beaten to death because she was out on a jog by herself. That's a limb there for you, dude. Just unbelievable. These people don't care. These Democrats do not care. Immediately, family, feel sorry for her. That's a shame. That being said, we must pass this bill that would have done nothing to alleviate the problem whatsoever. It still had 5,000 illegal aliens in the country and still would not hold them at all. The Lincoln-Riley Act actually does address the problems very specifically to Lincoln-Riley and to other people who have been victimized by illegal alien crime after those illegal aliens had run in with the law. The no cash bail. Okay, go ahead. All you did was push a lady. All you did was punch a guy. All you did was this. Go ahead. Go. All you did was attack a police officer. Go ahead. Get out of here. Those people would be then held without bail because they've proven themselves to be a criminal element. But all that means to Democrats is they've proven themselves to be fertile ground for future Democratic voters should they be able to finagle them citizenship. That's what it's all about. That's what they're looking at, is we don't want too many convictions of these people because there are some states who won't let convicts vote. And when we manage to get them their citizenship, we don't want any of them to be unuseful to us. It's gross. They don't give a damn about this girl. They don't give. The whole Republicans are exploiting it. Which do you think is more comfort to the family? Which one do you think is... But they're actually not even going the full-blown George Floyd route of, 15 different funerals and blah, blah, blah. Which one do you think is more comfort to those grieving the loss of Lakin Riley, the people who are trying to prevent future Lakin Rileys? You can say it's exploitative, but the end result would be that there would be fewer violent illegal alien criminals on the street. There's no denying that. Or the people who go, yeah, sorry about your loss, but I ain't doing squat about it. Why don't you quit whining? Why don't you this, that, or the other? Which one do you think is of more comfort to the family? Go ahead, think about it for a second. I'll wait. I want to end it today shifting gears to the UK. It's part of a continuing series, me pointing out how even though it seems as though, Europe, they're just like us. Canada, they're just like us. Australia, they're just like us. Western democracies, blah, blah, blah. Freedom-loving. The First Amendment is unique. Our Constitution is unique. The Second Amendment is unique. You've watched the UK, Australia, Canada strip away gun rights from their citizenry. Freedom of speech is what the left loves to They call it hate speech. And sometimes it is. It's nasty speech. That's the only kind of speech that ever really needs protection, is the nasty stuff. If it's speech that everybody agrees with, nobody's ever going to get bothered by it. Nobody's ever going to complain. But it's the stuff, it's the nasty stuff. And they go, oh, this is hate speech. And you go, all right, let's get rid of hate speech. And you get rid of what everybody agreed was hate speech. And then the majority of people don't like suddenly what somebody else is saying. This is hate speech. And like, well, it's not what it was before. They moved the bar a little bit. Now this is hate speech. Okay, let's ban that. And then they lower the bar a little bit more. Now, this is hate speech. And as long as it takes just a simple majority or a very vocal minority who is insistent and doing things that nobody else is paying attention to, they can end up banning everything. Your instinct is to ban. The government, our government was set up not to ban things like that, not to ban speech. Because we recognize that while there are horrible things that everybody would all agree on are horrible things, it would then ultimately lead to the banning of things that people didn't think were horrible things. It would just mean the silencing of political opponents. So you think, well, all Western democracies are like, not even close. Over in the UK, I saw this meme this morning on Twitter. 21st century British justice. One guy, Sean Tuck, posted racist comments on Facebook, got 15 weeks in prison. Sold anti-immigration stickers, a guy named Sean Melia, M-E-L-I-A. Got 24 months in prison. Raped 12-year-old girl, a guy named Ali Saomi. Saomi? S-O-A-I-M-I. 180 hours of community service, no prison time. I thought, well, that's ridiculous. So I looked them up. Right here. Man from Liverpool, this is the first one. Man from Liverpool jailed and handed football banning order for posting racist abuse online. Okay. A football supporter has been jailed for 15 weeks after posting racist abuse online. Nobody was hurt, except for feelings. Horrible things, I'm sure. They don't really say what they are, because you can't even report them. Sean Tuck, 37, from Liverpool, was found guilty of malicious communications and sentenced today, Thursday, 29th of February this year, at South Sefton Magistrates Court. Tuck posted racist abuse of a fellow Everton supporter in the comments section of the club's official Facebook page in August 2023. Following an investigation, Tuck was arrested and charged with malicious communications. As well as a prison sentence, Tuck also has been told he must pay a £155 victim surcharge, whatever that is, and handed a 6-year football banning order. Chief Detective Inspector Alan Nuttall said, quote, Tuck clearly thought he could post disgusting racist comments online and it wouldn't be investigated by police. Well, they got him, and the world is safer for it. Then you go to the next case, Samuel Millay. Far-right activist jailed for after sticker campaign. They got him. A far-right activist has been jailed after a judge branded him an anti-Semite with Nazi sympathies. Now, why is he far-right when the anti-Semitism is on the far left? Well, it's because that's how the media works. Samuel Millay, 34, was found guilty earlier this year of inflicting racial hatred or inciting racial hatred after a series of stickering instances between 2019 and 2021. Millay from Pudsey in West Yorkshire, God, they're so British, was sentenced to 2 years in prison at Leeds Court on Friday. Judge Tom Bayliss Casey said the publication of this kind of material is corrosive to our society, end quote. Gave him 2 years, putting stickers up. Horrible things on the stickers, but still, stickers. Then we go to this. Newcastle grooming gang jailed for raping 13-year-old girl. Huh. Grooming gang. Yes, there's a bunch of foreigners. They call them Asians, but they're really from Pakistan. They're Muslims. And there he is. There's the guy who, Hamoud Al-Saomi, 21. He had 3 counts of sexual assault and 1 assault by penetration, jailed for 2 years, but suspended for 2 years, with 180 hours of unpaid work, community service. That's what the Brits call community service. Why? Well, he was a youngster. He was underage at the time. And so now that they took so long to get to the point of conviction, oh, and the girl was only 12, blah, 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 it's all illegal. But it doesn't matter. Progressives are progressives everywhere. They are the same everywhere. There are 3 men, 26, 23, or 4 men, 23 and 21. Now, the 21-year-old was 15 at the time, but he said, it's my turn. His own record is saying it was my turn when raping the 15-year-old girl. Very heinous. At 15 years old, you know what it is, what you're doing. But they said, oh, it's cultural differences. Cultural differences. and a misunderstanding. We need, you know, they raped a girl repeatedly. They raped a girl repeatedly. And this guy gets 180 hours of community service and a 2-year suspended sentence. 2 years. All right, as long as you don't rape any girls in the next 2 years, you're good. You rape somebody else and we might have to consider throwing you into prison. But you post something online that's nasty. You say something. And as nasty as whatever these people said it was, that ends up with prison time. But being a part of a grooming gang in the UK and raping 13-year-old girl, 12-year-old girl, actually, at the time. That's community service because of cultural differences and whatever. I don't know how you justify those two things. I don't know how you square that circle. Doesn't make a damn bit of sense to me. It's just disgusting. But I just want you to be aware of the fact that we simply are not the same. We are unique in the world. And that is why the United States has to be protected. That's why our rights have to be defended, even the ones you don't like or you don't exercise or whatever. Because once you start letting them slip, they're gone. The government isn't going to give them back. You want to talk about real violence? It's when the people have had enough of a government taking their rights away and they try to get them back. The best thing to do is to not give them up in the first place. Anyway, that is enough. We have to give up to time here. So that is all we have for this Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up the week. Man, and get ready for the Week in Effing Review. Time is just zipping by. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.